Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a fabulous guest all the way from Arizona, someplace I've always wanted to go. Chris Redish is here with his new film, 1111. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So I guess we should start off at the beginning and just sort of casually talk about your film and the creation of it and where it comes from. So can you start there? Okay. I mean, it's about aliens. I can give them that much.
Yeah, well, it's set in Sedona. It's about a guy trying to get himself abducted by aliens. And if you've ever been to Sedona, it's that kind of place. You know, you can walk up to pretty much anybody on the street and say, tell me about your alien abduction. And they will tell you about their alien abduction. This is what Sedona is like. So I had the idea of making a film around that. It's a comedy, sci-fi comedy. And at one point, as for research, I went to a meeting of real UFO enthusiasts, and the speaker that day believed that he kept seeing 1111 everywhere, like clouds in the sky, sticks on the ground. Everything to him pointed to 1111. And to him, that meant that at 11 minutes past 11 on the day of the next solstice, a portal would open up off of Bell Rock, and he would jump into it and be transported to the center of the universe. Now, I'm not quite sure how he got from seeing 1111 everywhere to knowing that at that moment there was going to be a portal opening. I'm not sure how he made that jump. But that's how the theme of 1111 came into the movie. I use it slightly differently from him, but it's about a guy who keeps seeing 1111 everywhere and thinks he knows what that means.
That's pretty cool. Now, did any time you just wanted to do a documentary about these people at this place? This sounds like a whole film by itself.
Yeah, I'm not really a documentary guy. It's a good idea. I mean, we did have the idea one of the marketing ideas we came up with. We didn't follow through on it, but one of the ideas we had was to register the domain name Abductees Anonymous. .org, and I did register that at one time, and then we were going to get people to seriously write about their or talk about their alien abduction and you know, as if they believed this was a real 12-step program, and then we would later reveal to them that it wasn't. But we decided that, you know, we might get into a lot of trouble with people for doing that, so we let it go.
Wow. I think that would work perfectly. I wish you had done that, because, I mean, your film does touch on UFO Anonymous pretty much right at the beginning. We pretty much see your main character go to a meeting.
Abductees Anonymous comes in at about 2-minute mark. Yes, that's true.
And my favorite, I'm not going to ruin it for people, why he gets kicked out of the meeting is my favorite part. I thought that was good. Pretty funny.
Thank you.
So I was thinking to myself the other day after watching this, did you ever think this was a perfect TV show pitch? Because I really think it would work better as a TV show. I could watch this show because it's pretty funny.
Right. Yeah. People have mentioned that kind of thing, that there's some episodic potential here. So, you know, I'm open to it. You know, I'll take it. If somebody wants to run with it, I'm happy to go with it.
Oh no, I want you to run with it. I don't think we need somebody else.
Well, somebody needs to run to me with the money, and then I'm happy to run with it from there.
Well, I mean, Netflix has piles of cash for everything, and this is something I would totally want to see more of. So let's go start there.
All right, we'll start there. Sounds good.
At any time, did you feel this? Obviously, it's a comedy. After the first 2 minutes, you realize it's a comedy. Did you ever want to add action to it, or you said, nope, this works as a comedy, I'll just keep it as that?
Pretty much keep it as a comedy. In the earlier drafts, we never got to actually see any spaceships. We never got – it was all implied. And then I just decided – I really would like to, you know, make this more real sci-fi, and so we moved in that direction, which, given our budget, was a challenging decision that perhaps in retrospect was not the best one, but I think we did pretty well given what we had to work with.
I also want to touch on, is your lead character the worst tour guide ever, or did you go on a tour and you based him on that tour?
I did not go on a tour, but it is, yes, he's basically the worst tour guide ever. Yeah, the world, if you imagine the world's worst tour guide, this is him at this point in his life. Yes.
So do you feel if we went in a prologue, he would be a better tour guide, or no, he just is bad at his job?
Well, I think we meet him at a you know, at the low point of his life, when things have not been you know, going too well for him. You know, you see fairly early on that his Jeep that he does his tours in breaks down, and he ends up having to use a little panel van which has no windows. You know, so this is. You know, this is a rough time for him. I think, you know, I think in the past, yeah, maybe he would have been a little better.
Well, let's discuss. You brought up the van. We can discuss the design of the van. It looks like you actually did some work on the inside of the van to make it look like a tour van inside.
We did try and dress it up to make it a little more UFO-y and exciting. Yeah, but it is actually my van. I still have it. I used it in my business for 17 years, and then it retired, and it's now, you know, used to make trips to Home Depot. It's still my van. Still love it.
So have you ever been on a tour of UFOs in Arizona? There must be many of them then, if that many people have been abducted.
Yeah, there are many of them. I have not been on one. No, I have not done that.
Okay. Now your lead character has an interesting closet full of shirts. He seems to have a bunch of yellow ones and a red one he doesn't really like.
Yes, yes. And if you've ever seen Star Trek, the original series, you will know what that's all about.
Okay, that's where I figured you were going, but I had to ask.
Yes, that's right.
Was there other concepts involved in the shirts, or you're always going, nope, we're going to go with that concept?
It was always that concept. He was always, you know, a Trekkie fan, and that was always the direction we were going to go.
I also want to discuss, I find your cast works so well together. Do they know each other beforehand, or you actually pull these random people in?
These were for the most part did not know each other. A couple of people did, but for the most part, they were new to each other. Some of the people in there I've worked with on a number of films, Jennifer Falsgraf, who plays Eve, the wife, we've worked together on many projects together, and Charlie Baker, who played Tim, and Dylan Vineyard, who played Dax. They were already friends, I think that was about it. Most of the others did not know each other.
Well, so did you have a lot of rehearsals, or it just gelled perfectly together?
So the process that I use as a director, which I learned from a guy called Mark Travis, and anybody who's interested in being a director, I highly recommend you seek out Mark Travis in LA and just try and study with him, because he is absolutely brilliant. So the process that I have adopted through him is to go through what he calls staging rehearsals. Other people might call it blocking. He calls it staging, and it's designed to bring out the subtext of the scene. And so we did a small group of us did rehearsals once a week for pretty much a year to drill down into the script and find how we could stage each scene in a way that would bring the most out of the script and make the most sense. But those were not necessarily the people that were going to be acting in the movie. Some of them did, but these were just friends who were kind enough to support me in this way. And to be honest, that was probably my favorite part of making the movie. We had such fun doing that on the Wednesday nights for a year. As far as the rehearsals with the actual cast on set went, we had 2 days, 2 days of rehearsal before we started filming. So it was a question of everybody getting to know each other really rapidly and diving into the characters. And, you know, I have to say they were already great. They were already in the characters when they arrived on set. So, you know, that yeah, it went very smoothly from there.
So I also noticed you had help from the Arizona Helicopter Adventures.
Yes. They allowed one of our camera operators to take a flight with them and get some scenic aerial shots.
Well, they're beautiful shots. I was like, is that drone footage? And of course, because I'm me, I have to watch the credits. I'm like,
right.
That's where they came
from. There's definitely some drone footage in there too. There's a couple of shots that I shot with a drone and a GoPro. And then that final closing shot of the movie, we hired a company out of Phoenix, Bird's Eye Productions, to come up and take that shot, because I just knew it was beyond my capability. It was interesting. We were filming in December, and the weather that day that he was due to come was looking really bad, and he called me just as he was leaving Phoenix, and he said, are you sure you want me to come? I'm looking north at the weather and it just looks awful. And if I get there and I can't film, you have to pay me anyway. I can't, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. Are you sure you want me to come? And I said, yes, come anyway. And he arrived and we took, I think it was about five takes. There was the snow stopped just as he arrived. And we got five takes in, and then it started snowing again. But by, within those five takes, we had what we needed. And so it was one of those little miracles that that you pray for, and we got.
I'm just going to ask a weather question. You know, it's nothing to do with the movie. You get snow in Arizona only because you're up in the mountains?
Right, yeah. Phoenix doesn't generally get snow, but up in Sedona, yeah. We're at about 4,000 feet, 4,500 feet, something like that. So, yeah, we do get snow. Not when we were filming, we didn't get heavy snow. It was light snow at that time. But last year, we had something like 16 inches on the ground at one night. It was, yeah, we can get snow.
So how does that feel as a filmmaker? If you say, okay, today we're going to do an outdoor shot, which you do many, but it looks pretty summerish in most of your shots. How do you react to that?
Yeah. So, I mean, Arizona does have like 300 days a year of sun. So it does look summery, I guess, in most of the shots. But we were filming in December. The story is set in November. That was a pretty good fit. But you know, we had there's an outdoor hot tub scene, which it was freezing the day that we filmed that, and
really,
well, it was freezing the day we were scheduled to film that. We had to end up rescheduling it in the end. It was just too cold. And there's another scene where one of the characters is not wearing a lot of the clothing. I won't say too much. That was a freezing cold day.
Really? Because, I mean, I just assumed as a viewer, being a hot tub, it would be hot.
Well, when we ended up filming the hot tub scene, the hot tub was hot, and we filmed it when the weather was warm. It was scheduled to film. Yeah, we had to come back and reshoot a couple of things, and that was one of them. It was scheduled to film on a day, and it was barely above zero. So we had to reschedule.
So I want to discuss the church location. You don't really spend a lot of time at the church, mm-hmm. but I like the church. Did you ever thought of you writing that in more to spend more time there? Or you're just like, nope, this is all we need. Get out of here. Because you really introduce a character.
Yeah, that's right. We spent one day filming there, and it was just a little bit. So we were very grateful to have such a beautiful church, and it was never particularly a big part of the film. But we were very glad to get the access to it when we did.
And you also have a liquor store. I wouldn't want to leave him out.
Yes, that was up in Carefree. We filmed the supposed liquor store. Yeah.
What do you mean, supposed? Is it a convenience store?
Yeah, it was the Carefree General Store, I believe they're called. And it, so it would, you know, they sell all kinds of things, including liquor.
And Vaseline.
Yeah, we may have staged that a little bit.
I don't think I'm ruining anything. The house. We got to talk about the house. You spent a ton of time at this house.
Yes.
I don't know if there's a room you didn't use other than the bathroom, and you may have used that, and I just missed it. I mean, you were all over this
No,
house.
The bathroom's in there. Oh, yeah, the bathroom's in there.
Then there you go.
Yeah. We used everybody. Yeah, we were so fortunate. We had, a lady was very kind, and her husband too. They allowed us, I think it was basically a week. We spent a week in their house. They moved out, and gave us the whole place. We even slept there. Some of the cast and crew slept there, yeah, we just basically took it over, and they were so good to us. Yeah,
fair enough. So I guess your catering was all done. You did it inside the house. You didn't have anything shipped in at any time.
We had people bring in food to us at every meal. Yeah, we were very, very lucky to get get people to bring in some really nice food. Yeah, so we did have food brought in.
Okay, just so viewers know, he'll know what I'm talking about, so I'm just going to beat around the bush there. You do have a character that joins the cast early on, comes to visit. I guess I'm not going to ruin anything. You add a wig to this person. I presume it's a wig, unless they have really different hairstyle. How was that makeup done, that character design?
Yeah, so most of that was her choices. She wanted the actress, Krista Allen, wanted to have particular wig, that particular hair color. And she also brought her own wardrobe to set. She already knew what she wanted to wear, and it worked really well. So, on a low budget film, it's like you're so reliant on the cast to help with more than what the cast really should be doing. That, you know, they're helping in so many ways. We did have hair and makeup on set as well. So we were able to help with those. But as far as the costume went, she provided her own.
So you do a lot of green screen work in your film near the end. Mm-hmm. Now, where did you shoot your green screen? Was it in the basement, or did you have a green screen set up somewhere?
No, we filmed at college. I think it was Collins College, I believe, is what it was called. They closed down somewhat soon after we had filmed, unrelatedly, believe. But they had a very nice large green screen studio, and they allowed us in for a day. So we shot all of the green screen in a day. It was a very intense day. But we got all of the green screen done in that time.
Now, at the one scene I'm talking about, do you use practical effects, or is that all added in when they're lying down? Is it tables and then green screened over it, or those are actual props you brought in?
So we had tables built, and they were just covered with a cloth, and then we had them, everything rotoscoped out, basically. There was a huge amount of rotoscoping to do, which means cutting out the important parts of the image and discarding the unimportant parts. There was a lot of work. We had originally intended that what we shot on set for the tables they were lying on would be used in the movie, but we found eventually that they really didn't look the way we wanted them to look. So they had to be cut out. They were not green. If we had planned in ahead, we would have made them green, but we didn't.
Did you find that the most laborious intensive of your film, the green screen work?
You mean in the post-production, or do you mean actual filming?
Post-production and filming.
So, for the filming, I mean, the whole thing was very intense filming. We shot the whole thing in 17 days, and so the whole process was very intense. And that was certainly one of the most intense days, because we only had one day and we had to get everything done in that day. And as you've seen, it's probably, I don't know, a quarter of the movie. So that was a very intense filming day. And certainly when it came to post-production, yeah, the effects work was the hardest. For a long time, we were actually stalled because we didn't have enough money to get the effects done, and we didn't know how we were going to do it. And then after being stuck for quite a few months, we got a referral to a company, Rhodium Studios, who are based in India. And so they were willing to take it on, and were able to work with our budget. And they did an amazing job, especially considering what we gave them to work with. They did a fantastic job. So we were, you know, I was uploading gigabytes of footage to them. You know, it would take several days to upload, and then they would download it, work on it, and then re-upload it back to me, and that would take several more days. So it was a very intense process. I think the whole effects work ended up taking something like 6 months or so. I think it took them about 6 months
Wow, that sounds like a labor intensive program. I'd be worried.
We were very worried that we just didn't know how we were going to get it done. We weren't able to find anybody that could work in our budget locally, and in the end we had to go overseas.
Okay, you do have some couple of cute songs throughout your film, and I would be upset, especially the country singer singing his songs. Did you write the songs, or did you hire people to write the songs?
So those songs, I had the idea of what I wanted, and Mike Burdick, who was our sound recordist, who was also a friend. He was a friend and a musician, and also a fellow comedy player. He and I both played in an improv troupe. I've done improv for quite a while, and he was also doing improv. And so we knew each other from that. And so I told him what it was I wanted, and he wrote the actual songs. And unfortunately, he has since died, very sadly. If you remember, there's a song that comes on the radio when Tim is in the van, and there are some tourists in the back of the van that start singing along. The main tourist doing that is Mike, who wrote the song. So that's his little cameo.
I think that's one of my favorite scenes in the film. That's why it totally would work as I think that would be a meme. After a while, and people saw that, like, you'd watching clips and be like, that's a clip I would have in the movie.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it works well.
It's a nice moment. Yeah, nice moment.
You just said you had improv training. I do feel that works in your film. I think you can see that you have the timing down as you write. You get exposition, joke. Like, you definitely have them. I mean, especially with the daughter. I think the daughter channels you a lot more than you're probably willing to admit.
Interesting. Yeah. That is interesting. I don't think there's, if you want to do comedy, I don't think there's anything better as a learning process than doing improv. It's just, it helps so much. And, you know, it kind of helps you in life too. I mean, you know, when you've stood up on a stage in front of 100 strangers, having no idea what you're going to say, and then you say something and you get a laugh, it's like that. If you can do that, you begin to feel like, well, I could probably do pretty much anything if I can do that. So it's a very empowering process. And we were also really lucky that several of the main actors were great improvisers. Charlie Baker playing Tim, and Krista Allen playing Andromeda in particular. They are both excellent improvisers. And, you know, one of the things that I find as a director when I'm casting is I look for actors that can improvise because I think they tend to give amongst the best performances, but also they will improve your script. No matter how great you are as a writer, there's always something more that can be added to it on the comedy side. And both of them in particular, and other cast members too, but both of them in particular added so much to the script with their, just their little ad-libs. And there are so many of them through the movie. And they don't even get the credit for them. So, you know, so it's amazing that what they were able to add to it.
Well, we do have to discuss the daughter, at least I do a bit. The note writing scene under the door made me laugh. I think that's probably one of my favorite bits. So did that come from a real life experience or just something you thought about?
Yeah, it's more just something I thought about it. I don't think I've quite had that experience in real life. You know, I remember feeling that way as a teenager, but I don't remember ever behaving that way as a teenager. So, it was just one of those things that came to me.
Well, I think we're time in the interview to ask you some fun questions, if you're prepared. Since it's your first time on my show, what's your favorite film?
I think I go with Life is Beautiful. You know, set in a Nazi concentration camp, a comedy set in a concentration camp.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I love films that are able to make you cry 1 minute and laugh the next minute. That, you know, that is such a hard thing to do. And that film does it so well.
It does. A lot of people have not seen that film, I would say.
Yeah. Highly recommended. Life is Beautiful.
One book you read on film that helped you out.
I don't know that I've read that many books on film. I haven't read that many books on film, if any. There have been a number of teachers that have really helped me out, but books not particularly.
Your last question. What advice would you give to indie filmmakers?
I think the thing that to start with is to start with short films is fairly obvious, but try and make them exceptional in some way. Try and find some way to stand out. Choose a genre that most other people don't choose, or find a way to just get that little edge in your film that other people don't have, because that's what, you know, the world of film is so great now in that it's so inexpensive, relatively speaking, to make a film compared with what it was 10, 20 years ago. But the downside of that is that everybody now can make a film. So if you can just find some way of standing out from the crowd, it will make life so much easier when you get to the point of needing to find people that will support you and invest in you, because you've got to, yeah. Why would they invest in you as opposed to any of the other hundreds of thousands of film students around? So just try and find that edge and never post anything online unless you think it is really your best work, because, you know, so many times I have Googled somebody and pulled up an example of their work that is not that great. And, you know, once it's up on the internet, it can be hard to get it down. I don't post anything immediately after I make it, because after I make it, you know, I either think it's great or it's terrible, one of the two, after I make it. But maybe a year later, I can watch it and say, okay, yeah, this is pretty good most of the way, or yeah, this is not really my best work. And, you know, make the decision, you know, maybe a year later after you can be a little more objective on it. And, you know, if it really is your best work, absolutely post it and let the whole world know about it. But if it's not, just let it, you know, hide away as an experiment and move on to the next project. And just show what you think is your best work.
Before we let you go, we have to tell everybody where they can find your great film, 1111.
Yeah, so it's on Amazon Prime, and it's also on YouTube and iTunes. But Amazon Prime is probably the easiest place to find it.
Well, thank you for your time, and have a great day.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.